Hey folks, today I'm here with Chris Knight. He is a portrait photographer, he's an educator, and also an author. Today's interview is all about the dramatic portrait. Chris Knight, welcome to the show, man. How's it going?
Doing well. How about yourself? Great to be here.
I'm doing pretty good. This is going to be an interesting interview because you have a pretty outstanding, impressive body of work going on over there. And you wrote a book to tell others how you did it, you know, for the most part.
I did. Hence why I'm here.
Hence why you're here. And now you're on the press tour telling people about the book that tells people about how you created the impressive body of work. Look at that. It's awesome.
Something like that, yeah.
All right, well, tell us about that. Like for the people who may not be familiar with Chris Knight, tell us kind of, you know, the Reader's Digest version of the Chris Knight origin story.
Oh, wow. So I'm a portrait photographer based in New York. That's primarily where I work. I'm a teacher here at a couple of schools. I teach at Pratt Institute and New York Film Academy here in New York. I teach everything from Photo One all the way through retouching and basic and advanced Photoshop, stuff like that. I've been up here for six, seven years, I think, mm-hmm. up at this point, maybe a little bit less, five, six years. Originally, I grew up in Florida, did a lot of commercial lifestyle work. I worked in the Miami market for a while, then came up here and threw it all away and started again, and that's where I'm at.
That's awesome. Yeah, perfect. Perfect synopsis and perfect lineup. A couple of questions that I have even based on, I have a ton of questions, but even a few popped up just based on you introducing yourself that way. One of them is around retouching, and we'll just dive right in. So you're clearly a retouching expert if you're able to teach others.
I was a retoucher first. I was a retoucher. I mean, I won't say first, but I started in Photoshop. Jesus, 18, 19 years ago, I think mm-hmm. it was Photoshop 4 was the first thing. I was like 12.
I was going to say, what were you, like a zygote?
Yeah,
like what?
I was in seventh grade. We had it on the school's computers, and I just kind of started messing around from there. And then I went like to the library because YouTube wasn't a thing yet, and nothing online. Then I got Photoshop for Dummies, and I sat down with a book, and I said, okay, let's figure this out, and kind of a page at a time.
Yeah.
And I just messed around with Photoshop on and off for several years. I got into it quite a bit more seriously once I picked up photography again, which wasn't until like college, right after college.
Yeah. And in all this, all the questions I'm asking are about the dramatic portrait, which, by the way, is the title of the book that we mentioned earlier, which I'll show right now. So the dramatic portrait, who is this book for? Who is it designed for? Who'd you write it for? Right. Who'd you have in mind when you were sitting down there in late nights pecking away at the keyboard?
Right. So we actually, we kind of had this discussion early on because it's tough to kind of write a book unless you know who it's for. Mm-hmm. So we targeted it at the mid-level photographer looking to go up a little bit more. The way we approach it is it's not a textbook on every single ingredient that you need for either portraiture or lighting. It's more about my process. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a breakdown of that process. So it follows my workflow, so to speak, in terms of how I approach photography and image making, creation of an image from start to finish. Mm-hmm. So for me, a big part of my inspiration is drawn from classic painting and kind of everything that follows along with classic painting and portraiture. Yep. And I always found it to be so incredibly fascinating, all these different ways in which basically the human form has been portrayed over the years. And so it's this, I call it like cocktail party version of art history. And it's not going to make anyone an expert, but it's kind of enough to be able to have like an abridged cocktail party version of a lot of these different movements, which are not necessarily all portraiture, but you still kind of have to learn them because they all fit into this roadmap of it. And then
And Photoshop is just in terms of getting your brain around Photoshop, it's almost like medicine. You know, you will never, if you're a doctor, yeah, you could be a specialist in certain areas, but you're never going to know everything there is about every single discipline there is in medicine. Same with Photoshop. It's many Absolutely. Things to miss many people. I was looking at your book, which is great, by the way, and I was thinking, yeah, this is like just what you said. This is, yeah, there's no way you're going to create the Photoshop Bible. Even when they tried to create the Photoshop Bible, it didn't work, right? So now, sure. you know, but you can give one man's perspective into how I use it to get my work done and how I use it to create these fantastic images, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's not meant to be a one-stop shop for any singular part. So with lighting, I'm a big proponent of lighting, and like I love lighting and all that kind of stuff. So I dig into that a bit. But at the end of the day, you know, most photographers who are successful, they're all pretty much working with the same set of tools. They have the same toolbox, and they're making their own images with it. And why is it that you can look at an Ellen von Unwerth or Richard Avedon or an Irving Penn, and like, what is it about them that allows them to create images that are uniquely their own? And so the main goal, the main arc of the book, is to equip people with the tools and to at least show you what to consider when you are approaching a body of work, which will hopefully lead to your own stylistic approach to creating that work. So it's really about how you can craft your own style, or what ways you can what tools you can use to craft your own style. It's just a matter of putting it into this mindset of going, okay, well, now I kind of see what I need to use. How do I channel all of these things into the greater idea of what these images are trying to create?
Now that begs the question. So you bring up style, and we talk about style a lot on the show in terms of how do you define your own personal style? What's the path to figuring out, you know, what my look is, you know? But then the question, and this comes up from a conversation I had with a gentleman a couple days ago, and I asked him about what his personal style was. This is just an over coffee discussion, wasn't an interview. And he was saying that he doesn't have a personal style. He's like, he's not a professional, granted, but he's sure. an advanced amateur who has very high level of skill, right? And yeah. I said, what's your style? What's your genre? And he said, I don't have one. I just like shoot a lot of stuff, you know?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. So to people like that, that's the question, because people listening to this, and if they've been listening to TWIP for any amount of time, they hear that. Like, if I want to get really good and be the Chris Nye New York, you know, running around and all, you know, be that photographer, I need to develop a style.
I'm a brisk walker. I'm a brisk walker.
Okay, Bridget Trundle. Okay, so we preach that you need to figure out what your personal style is and focus on that and not be a jack of all trades. So help me reconcile that. Do you need a personal style or don't you?
That's a really good question. So it really boils down to what you want out of your photography. Do you just want to go and shoot and dick around and do whatever moves you at that particular point in time? Mm-hmm. No. You know, if you and I encounter all kinds of people who do photography as a hobby. And so they're not actually out to do anything more than what gives them joy in their free time.
Right.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, I think it's probably at the end of the day, maybe even a little bit more pure happiness, because you don't have to deal with a lot of the day-to-day mundane things mm-hmm. that photography can bring. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be a working photographer, mm-hmm. I do think that the concept of style is very, very important. Now, it obviously depends on where you want to be that working photographer, sure. right? So, you know, certain places, you know, if you're a portrait studio in a small town, you know, you may think that your style or this concept of style doesn't necessarily apply to you, but I promise you it does. Wedding photographers, it does. Mm-hmm. Small portrait studios, it does. Certain things it may lend itself a little bit less to, but when people are hiring a professional, they understand that there is a certain amount of competency that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time to get to the point where I realized that competency wasn't the goal, like understanding the tools wasn't the goal, or being able to recreate anyone else's work wasn't the goal. It was this idea of, all right, now I can just kind of pick and borrow and choose and pull from all these different places, and you can start to create something that can be inspired by other people, but should be uniquely yours. Because at the end of the day, you want someone to go, hey, I need fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Who do I go to for that? And it doesn't matter what your thing is. You just kind of got to figure out what that thing happens to be.
Yeah. And part of that is what you said. Part of it is photography is easily commoditized, right? So you could be part of, like a plumber. Like, if you want to, no disrespect to plumbers. No disrespect to plumbers.
I use this exact same analogy all the time. No, go ahead.
Yeah, no disrespect to plumbers, but you could call a plumber, and if you have a leaky sink, they're going to fix the leaky sink if they have a level of skill to fix the leaky sink. And the next plumber that you call, if they have a similar level of skill, you're going to come away with the same fixed leaky sink. If you want to be in that group of commoditized people that you're just going to click the shutter and walk away, and there's no kind of personal thumbprint on the work, then that's one thing, and it's totally valid to be that. But then if you, like you were saying, if you want to move up to a pro and someone who their work is their calling card, then that takes the development of a personal style. And by the way, before you chime in, chapter 8 in your book is called Personal Style, page 209. That is some gold right in there. Your subtitle is You Do You, right?
So, you do you, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you agree with that? That it's kind of bifurcated into commoditized and pro?
I do. And to be fair, even a lot of people at the highest end sell their personal thumbprint for very high prices when the client is paying enough. Mm-hmm. Some of the most creatively underwhelming work I've ever done has paid me the most, and I have no problem with that because. You know, at the end of the day, that's the give and take.
It funds the other stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, we were talking about this the other day, but photography is so fundamentally unique to pretty much every other creative art form that came before it, mm-hmm. in that commerce is so inherently injected into its DNA. Like the ad agency or the artist agency, Art and Commerce, right? That's the fundamental building block of what photography is. When photography was created, when it came about 150-ish years ago, mm-hmm. It was created as this almost novelty. No one really had any idea what to do with it yet. It was like, all right, let's kind of document reality and let's make a picture. Right. And they would travel around and they would sell this, the early photographers. Yeah. And it was this way to document reality as a way to make money. And it wasn't for 50, 60 years after that genesis of what photography was, that it actually started to develop into its own kind of art medium. They hadn't quite figured out what it was. So the idea of photography as a true creative medium is still young.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't really figure it out until around, the turn of the century, with like Stieglitz and stuff. But then again, it really didn't turn into what photography is currently until like 50 years ago in the 60s with Sarkoski.
Yeah. Now, when you look at, and you're in a unique position to answer this question, being an educator, an author, working photographer. So you have a toe in the pro world, so you're up to date on the zeitgeist of what clients want and all that stuff. But then you have a toe in the amateur world because you're molding young photography minds. When you look at the young photographers coming in, What is kind of the biggest hurdle that they have to get over, do you think, these days?
It really depends on, honestly, where they come from, which I think is interesting. It's all over the place, and you know, I'm fortunate to be able to teach kids or students from all over the world, and it's really interesting that people from different parts of the world come with their own idea of what they think they need to learn. Mm-hmm. And it is always kind of interesting. And then on top of that, they come with oftentimes different cultural preferences for aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I may personally prefer something desaturated. Mm-hmm. And then you try to explain that to someone who loves color being completely vibrant and saturated, sure, and just sure. Those small little things are kind of an interesting little element. I think the biggest hurdle is almost always that gear doesn't matter as much as people want you to think it does.
Yeah. Well, you mean as the people that make the gear want you to think it does, right?
Yeah. Or you know, to be fair, like a lot of the photographic community, hey, let's you know, you need this light, you need this camera.
Yeah. See, you know what? Let me pause you right there, because that is the crux of a lot of hangups that a lot of new photographers get that I see. And it is, yeah, you come into this industry and you of course you're gonna get, you know, you get excited, you start reading websites and listening to podcasts and blogs and all this stuff, and YouTube and tutorials and all this stuff, and you get excited and jazzed about this stuff, and you feel like you need the right gear to do it, but then you don't know who to listen to in order to tell you what the right gear is. You could easily get the wrong gear. That's why people always have the question that we all don't like, which is, which camera should I buy, right? Because they don't know which sure. camera, because there's so many options out there. It's like, which phone right. should I buy, right? Who knows right. what phone you should buy,
right. right?
So how do you jump through that? Yeah, we can easily say gear doesn't matter, but it does. In furtherance of your vision, right?
Right. And I talked about this. I think I added a little section on the book in that. I'm like, cool. It doesn't matter, but it does. And it's kind of it. Most cameras made in the last 5 years that are, you know, SLRs mm-hmm. are
or mirrorless.
Yeah. The ability to change and shoot manually easily. How about that? Any yeah. camera that gives you the ability to shoot manually easily.
There you go.
Anything that's been made in the last 5 years is going to probably be good enough for you for now when you're starting.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's you know, it's not going to change your life that much to shoot on a $3,000 camera or a $1,500 camera. You're not going to see that much of a difference.
Yeah.
And something that can fundamentally operate in a manual way, simply, a good pro can operate it well and take yeah. great photos with it. So in that way, it doesn't matter. However, the best tools do improve the lives of the professionals who know how to use them.
Right.
And there is a point at which the gear matters, but I usually say it takes about 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. I mean, and like you say, I mean, it all depends, right? You have to know what it is you're shooting. For example, if you're a street photographer and you like going out at 1 a.m. getting shots of the city while it sleeps, you probably right. want something that has, you know, that can shoot low noise, high ISO, or low noise, right. you know, and have a higher sensitivity to light than something like, you know, a Micro Four Thirds camera, which is okay, but not a Sony A7S, right?
Right. Or because I always think this is a really interesting experiment, because I really do love street photography. When you're in New York, the size of the camera you have actually has an impact on what the photographs look like. If you have something small and very innocuous, inconspicuous, you take it up and you take the picture and no noise and no one notices anything. I've gone out and I've done street photography with my 645Z, which is massive, and you bring it up and people look right at you, and it actually changes the dynamic.
You must be a real photographer.
Well, it's eye contact with the camera as opposed to something that's almost a little bit more stealthy.
Yeah.
And so it really depends on, you know, what you're actually trying to get out of the experience, because cameras can make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, you want to
shoot, right?
I
was going to ask you about that. Perception, you know, along with that whole gear question, what camera should I buy? It is perception, you know, negative and positive. For example, sure. On the negative side, you're going to some concert or something with your Z, you know, they're not going to let you in, right? So, you know, right. But if you show up with your iPhone, everybody has a phone, you could take right. You could take probably decent shots with it
right.
there. And if you're a street photographer, the larger the camera, the more self-conscious the subject is going to be. And that reminds me of, like, quantum physics or what, you know, there's this theory in quantum physics from Einstein that's called spooky action at a distance, where, okay. Yeah, it is. Look it up. It's cool.
I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, look it up. Google spooky action at a distance. And basically it says that things that aren't related to something else can affect it, right? So
okay. You
could excite an electron over here and over in Philly, at some cheesesteak place, a corresponding electron will move based on what you did. So, I think of that when I think of photography, because it's like, yeah, the camera affects the outcome, even though it's not touching it or anything. It's
affecting. Totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, it's crazy. So people shouldn't get, what camera should I buy question is definitely a loaded question, because it, how much money do you have? What are you shooting?
That's usually the next question, right? How much do you want to spend? I don't know. Well, you need to figure that out, because there's a wide range.
Yeah, I know. Well, Chris, let's switch gears to your work, man. So looking at some of your portraits and along with that style, people can see as these photos flash by, there's a style here, right? You have a vision. You know what you like. There's a palette of colors that you like in your images. What led you down the path to get to this particular style?
It's something that I'm into, I guess, now. Styles change and they evolve. And, you know, what I'm shooting now is different than what I was shooting 3 years ago and
sure. Vice
versa. But, you know, style was this thing that it took me a long time to figure out how important it was. I got competent relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
When I was learning, I'd say within a couple of years, I was competent. And then I spent much longer being mediocre.
I'm still in that phase, by the way.
Oh no, listen. It was one of the most frustrating things for me, because I was like, I would recognize I can do that. And it was hard to reconcile the reason why I wasn't getting the stuff I could do. I wasn't getting the jobs. Like, well, I can do it. Like, why is this an issue, right? I ultimately figured out, once I started developing something that was cohesive and pointed series of words that could define my work,
mm-hmm.
People started coming to me more for that. And people, you know, clients want to come to you for your thing, whatever your thing happens to be. So it just really depends on you know, how quick you can get to that point. And
What are your words?
So this is actually this is a Lindsay Adler exercise that I got from her, and I love to use it as a way to describe, to break down style and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, basically, think of 3 to 5 words that define your work. Basically, it should almost hit the person who's looking at your portfolio over the head when they look at your website, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then think about what you want those words to be if they are not the same thing. And so going forward, as you develop your book or your portfolio, you always want to keep these words in mind as a way to kind of guide your work to get to that point. So mine is dramatic, either theatrical or cinematic,
nice.
Painterly, And then I like a timelessness or an idea where you don't quite know the time, doesn't feel super, super modern or old. It kind of fits in this weird. So that's mine.
It's so timeless. Timeless. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm looking at some of these shots here, and they definitely have that. The other aspect that the shots I'm looking at, and I'm on chrisknightphoto.com right now. The other aspect that these photos that I'm looking at have is they all have a story. They all have an underlying story. Either one, you know, for the most part, there's some that are, you know, model shots or straight up portrait shots. But even those, there's an element of drama to the shots. And one of the things that I complain about a lot, to the chagrin of all the people around me, is that I love great. I mean, I'm in this field. I love to look at great images, however they come. But as I get older, the thing that my brain instantly goes to, and I think it's just because I'm a human, is what's the story behind this? And if there's no story, or if I have to reach too far to figure out what the story might be, I feel like it lost something that could have easily been won. Like, looking at your photos, I can look at 90% of them and without even reading any words, weave a story around what was going on there. Even like in the top left, there's a red-haired guy with a scarf around his neck, right? I can kind of weave in my head, who's this guy? Is he an immigrant? Is he this? You know, like, is he an immigrant in the third? You know, what's going on? You know, it kind of feels like that. And some of the more obvious ones are, you can definitely weave a story around what's going on. Is that how do you start these shots as Chris Knight? Do you sit down and you're hanging out having dinner with someone, and you know, you have an epiphany because you see someone with a funky hairstyle, you're like, you know what, that could make a shot? Or do you have a sketchbook? Like, what's your process for starting?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. It comes from a lot of different places, and it depends on how much I'm thinking through something. Sometimes it's not very thought out at all. It's just, here's a person, let's get a portrait of them. Mm-hmm. And that's usually no more than, sometimes it's very instantaneous, especially like a model shot. I kind of maybe look through their book, and it's not really rooted in anything more than what they look like. Other times, I'm able to do research if that particular subject has information available on them, mm-hmm. and I try to spend an hour or two learning about them and kind of getting into that headspace so that I can at least come to the table with some knowledge about them.
Yeah,
whether it's a way to relax them or bring that into the images.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a very loose idea. So with the redheaded guy, I wanted to do something that was themed around Les Miserables. Yeah. So that was what that was. I saw the guy and I'm like, oh, you know, he really had a great look.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to do a Les Miserables thing with him. And then sometimes, so like I've got the Saint Sebastian images, and then I've got the Nativity with Kim and Kanye, which are in my special projects.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. I was like, is that really them? And it is.
It's not. It's not really them.
Wait, it's not really them?
No. But those I had for a long time. The Kim and Kanye thing, that was almost 2 years from start to finish. I kind of sketched it out and drew it out and planned what each of those people would be and what it would mean and all these things. The Saint Sebastian was another one I probably spent 8 months to a year on it before I actually shot it and working out the logistics of it. That's actually, I love that series. It was something that I spent a long time developing. And like all the arrows and the wounds, I had a special effect artist. Like, I ordered the arrows from China and then I sawed them down and I brought them to a special effect artist and she made the wounds. It's like all the wounds and the arrows are practical.
Wow.
And then the rock, and then I got the whole thing in the set. And basically what's photoshopped out are the strings holding up the arrows because they couldn't self-support. So I had assistants on both sides holding them up. And I took the stuff off the sides. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty much exactly what you see. Like, I had the loincloth made.
Wow. See, that's some thought. So you built this image, and you know, a lot of people think, you know, it's serendipity, or if it's field of dreams. You know, if you think it, you can dream it. It will come. Just assemble a good looking model, a good photographer, a stylist, and a makeup artist, and this kind of image will just magically pop out, right?
Probably, yeah, I mean,
that
kind of stuff requires a little bit more planning. I mean, sometimes like with the fashion stuff, you can say, okay, here's the mood images we go for. You send it to the stylist, they pull the clothes, into the makeup artist, they're on it. You pick your models, you bring them in. And there's quite a bit less planning that's involved.
Yeah.
But those in particular, like the Kim and Kanye, we flew in a Kim impersonator from like Detroit or something. And then
so cool.
Please
tell me you guys went out and partied after that and hung out and impressed people.
I did, but the Kim and Kanye, they did. They were out in St. Louis. Like the set was built. You know, we craned in like that chandelier is actually hung from a big boom arm.
Mm-hmm.
But I did that with RGGEDU as like a long form tutorial, and that was kind of like the flagship. That was like the third day, the most complicated setup. And we spent like a day basically getting this one shot, and it was building the people in and getting them in and composition right. There's actually I wanted narrative to the lighting. So yeah. the tension on the Kim's face is actually the speed light, like in the shot. And, that speed light is actually slaved to the strobes in the scene. So it was actually firing when the strobes were going off.
Wow.
And so I wanted this idea of creating something that felt like a classic painting, but even that narrative of where the light comes from actually has this more practical application.
Yeah.
And then we got them as close as we could. We styled them, I think pretty well. And then I still had to go through in Photoshop and really liquefy the face to get it even better. But
the light coming from the photographer on the left of Kim, and we'll throw this image up, is that light is that done in post, or was that actually there when you shot it?
The speed light.
The speed light, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No,
so that's the light you're talking about. So that speed light was that you captured that at the time it was shot.
That's correct. That's gelled crazy. It blue, so it's a little bit slightly of a different temperature.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that was there. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was because here's the thing, right? So it's always like I love – one of the things I love about photography is the constant problem solving. Like it's problem solving across the board. It's like puzzles. And I was like, okay, I want to put this light in. All right, well, how do I make it work? Well, I can't use Canon because – Canon doesn't have a slave feature on their flash, so we ended up like going and finding like some cheap Yongnuo flash, Yongnuo.
We all know about those
because they have it, and so we threw it on, and it's firing off, and it worked.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy. So that's a good segue in this conversation into post production. So in your process for post production, and I think you go into some of this in the book, but. Post-production, your philosophy on it are when, like, some of the photographers that I interview, widely different ideas about what post-production is. For example, several years ago, I interviewed Sue Bryce, and Sue Bryce, I asked her about her post-production and what her workflow was, because she's a master retoucher, and she was basically telling me that she spends minutes per image, and they come out looking. You know, I mean, if you've seen Sue Bryce's work, you know when they come out.
Yeah, of course.
And then other people say, yeah, I'll spend hours on one image. And other people, like just last week, I interviewed a gentleman who said he doesn't look at photography as the decisive moment or capturing everything in one shot. He looks at it more linearly, where he's capturing pieces that he will then later composite together to create the vision in his mind's eye. Where do you fall on that?
Well, there is... I get all sides, you know, but the thing that I think frustrates me the most is when people go, oh, well, you know, those images it's too much post. It's a lot of Photoshop in these images. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go, well, are we still having this argument in 2017?
Thank you.
Like, is this really what people still want to fight about? Like, Photoshop's here.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere.
Right.
So, cool it.
Yeah.
But I definitely have no problem with manipulation. It really depends on the amount. So sometimes I will spend 30 minutes on an image, 30, mm-hmm. 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I will spend hours. Yeah. It really, really depends.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
I think it was Eric Almas had said some while ago, he's like, I'm not a photographer, I'm an image maker. Mm-hmm. And I use photography as part of that, but at the end of the day, I'm still out there to create images. Mm-hmm. And I think whatever it is you want to do, like, is fine. If you want to not do anything, if you want to do a million things, mm-hmm. whatever floats your boat, just don't be a dick about it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know,
but even then, so I'm looking at your work and I instantly feel like you're expensive. I feel like there's a high level of professionalism in your shots. I feel like if I hire you, I kind of know what I'm going to get, you know, which is professional. If you flip that to amateurs and advanced amateurs, or just to rewind, I know that you're going to clean up these images. You're going to do what it takes to make sure this image is a saleable image and it's perfect before any other human see it besides you. I get that feeling from these images.
Yeah,
so
I'm definitely
the amateur or the advanced amateur. Where is the line between passing your work off as I shot that like that because I'm a great photographer and I can do no wrong versus, yeah, I spent 3 days in Photoshop to make sure that this looked like I was great, and then you pass it off as it all happened in a 60th of a second. Like, how do you, where do you draw that line?
For me personally, I
or
will.
Just them. I mean, not you, because you're an artist and you're an educator, so it's all bets are off. But
I will say that. I usually people assume my work has a lot of post production on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot less than people think. It's largely done in the develop process, which I think people don't utilize enough. Mm-hmm. Like how much you can actually make the image look a certain way in Lightroom or in ACR. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's whatever works best for you. I mean, if you want to be the photographer that spends all the time shooting and spends no money or spends no time on the post-production, fine. If you want to spend a little bit and then spend a million hours in Photoshop because that's where you want to spend your time, that's yeah. fine. Right. It's about, you know, what your time is worth and where.
Yeah.
I started taking photography more seriously because I wanted to have better images to work on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I say that I learned a lot about Photoshop to spend less time doing it.
Yeah.
For speed's sake. So it's really where you want to place your time. There's no right or wrong. As long as the people who are looking at your pictures are happy, as long as your clients are happy, as long as you're happy, that's really what matters at the end of the day. I don't think there's this definite right or wrong.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's and it's going to be a moving slider down the road as well. So
it depends on where you can leach your catharsis from, right? You know,
exactly.
Do you get
exactly.
it from the process? Do you find solace in the process of taking the photos and all that? It just makes you go, ah. Or do you, when you're in the computer and you got all your images all set in a folder and it's time to get down to build that ship in a bottle, do you go, ah?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, okay, now I can have some fun and have my glass of
and
wine.
Some people love yeah. each side.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, it's a slider, right? So
I do think though that most, I'm not gonna say most, a large number of people who openly yell against how bad Photoshop sucks
yeah.
and how much it's ruining photography, I would say most of those people aren't good at Photoshop,
yeah,
and that's one of the reasons they don't like it.
That's the fear.
They don't want to learn something new
yeah.
Because of the way things have been done in their eyes for a while.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, Photoshop and post-production in general, it's a tool in the toolbox like anything else.
Yeah.
It's a tool like lighting. It's a tool like knowing your camera and styling. It's something that helps you articulate your final vision, whatever that happens to be, and you can use it a little bit or a lot, whatever is most effective for the image.
Yeah. There are all these tools, the camera, you know, if you're shooting video, the audio gear, the software, Lightroom, Photoshop, you know, whatever you're using, these are all tools that are in service to you as the image maker to tell the story.
Right? In service to the story, exactly.
Yeah, in
exactly.
service of the story, yeah. So then my last question for you, Chris, is you mentioned earlier the book, right? So the idea used to be back in the day that, you know, you weren't anything unless you had a really strong, quote, book. And that was literally a physical book, right? It was your portfolio that you would shop around, take out, you know, had a dust cover on it, you know, and you presented to people, and the better the photographer you were, the bigger the images, and you turn the pages and explain each image to the person that was looking, and then hopefully you walk away with the job. That's changed, right? That whole dynamic has changed and been democratized in a lot of ways. For example, I'm looking at your website here, which is beautiful. Straight to the point. I know how to contact you. I can do a number of things and follow you on social media, etc. But a lot of people that I talk to these days have even foregone this. Like they've leapfrogged the book, the physical book, the website, and have gone straight to Instagram as this is my book. You want to see what I do? I'm IG, you know, Frederick Van Johnson, whatever, right? So where do you fall on that? You know, as an educator, as you instruct your students, do you tell them, hey, you need to go set up your Instagram, or do you need to build a website or a physical book?
I mean, I make them set up a website because honestly, it costs $18 a year to host a website. Get a website.
Yeah.
The greater the imprint that you can make online, the better you will be. Listen, obviously, social media is an important part of promotion and business. But if you are only on social media, I this is purely personal opinion, but I think that people don't necessarily would give you as much value as if you had a website.
Yeah. Take you seriously. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. They wouldn't take you as seriously.
Yeah.
So get a website, get on social media. Basically you should buy up all of the social media real estate, whether or not you use it or not.
Yeah.
So if a new platform comes out that's popular, you should get it just to own your name.
Squat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was a little bit foolish when I started out, because I was like, I'm going to buy Chris Knight Photo because there was another photographer in Chicago who owned Chris Knight Photography, and he photographed nude male erotica, which is fine. It's fine. No, it's fine.
I love
it's
how like, you say that. Which is fine.
It's fine. No, the best thing was I have some very, very, very conservative relatives who would Google me and they'd pull up Chris Knight Photography, just dicks everywhere. I thought it was the funniest thing. But he eventually he closed his photography business probably 8 or 9 years later, and I finally was able to buy the domain. But in the meantime, I lost jobs to people who thought he was me, at least like one or two that I know about, because he had a domain that was similar. So, you know, you don't want to generate all that, you know, any confusion.
Yeah. Well, it's your brand. It's your
exactly. It's
your, well, exactly. Mean, and I hate to drag this out. This is a fascinating conversation. But like on that, so the domain selection, which back in the day, you know, was easy, and had I known, I would have registered everything under the sun. But it's harder these days, especially if you have a name like Fred Johnson, right? I mean, it's
sure,
you know,
sure.
It's nearly impossible, which is why I started using my full name, Frederick Van Johnson, for
you know,
online, and then Frederick Van as a brand, because I was, frankly, the main reason was I was able to get all the social media profiles for that name,
right? Right.
So what? Absolutely. So what? what do you suggest? I mean, like, for your students, if you have a student named, hey, Mr. Knight, my name is James Smith. Should I go get jamesmith.com? You're not going to get jamesmith.com.
You should go by a different name.
You know, go to the Hall of Records first. Yeah, so what should they do? Like, is it better to still keep your name and add some sort of, modifier on it, like photo? Or yeah, I mean, do you pick a different name? Like, do you go with, like, James Smith? Do you go with, you know, smithcrazyphotography.com or something?
I think it depends on the person. I've had people come to me with names that were very difficult to spell.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tough thing to get people to draw people to.
Yeah.
So sometimes I will say shorten it up or use a different name, but then at the same time you don't want to necessarily, I think, use something that's very generic. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be, and I have no idea who this person is, but Shutterbug Studio or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't I'm sure that's a thing.
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
But you know, I don't know how I would find, you know what I mean? It's a little bit too generic.
Yeah.
So I do think that you want to find some way to brand yourself. I had a kid, a really talented photographer, did some fashion, some kind of cool funky fashion stuff, and his name was Daniel something. He had a strange last name, and he ended up going by like Bambi Photo, and he kind of embraced that name and like went with like a pink website, and it works great.
Wow.
And so it really just becomes, you know, what you want to do with it, and you have to figure that out for yourself. Just yeah. Like any small business that, you know, has to put a sign outside, you got to figure out what you want, you know, your business to be. It's part of, you know.
And then I tell people, yeah, that's great, you could do Shutterbug Studio, Bambi, whatever, you know, but you have to think the long game. And down the line, 10 or 15 years from now, you're going to be stuck with that. Do you want to keep that? Chances are your name, you're probably still going to have it. It's still going to be relevant to you. So
right.
You might want to pick that. By the way, I went on hover.com and I looked up shutterbugstudio.com. It is available.
Oh, wow. How about that?
For $5,635.
Holy shit.
Maybe that's why nobody has it yet.
Maybe. Somebody's camping on it.
Exactly. They're just squatting. Well, let's end this. So you mentioned RGG. You've got a tutorial up on RGG right now. Where should people go to check that out and to go grab the dramatic portrait book, etc.?
Sure. RGGEDU.com. Right now they've got, they're running two of my tutorials together. One of them is a shooting process retouching tutorial where we do start to finish on three different shoots. It's basically the video version. It's a video companion to the book. It expands on a lot of what's in the book and kind of ratchets it up to 11, so to speak, in terms of production. And
so they could get the book and then they're like, you know, I dig this. I want to go deeper and actually see stuff. They could go get the course. And then
exactly, and that's
the journey.
It's meant to go together.
Okay,
and then also there is a Lightroom tutorial that they offer. I think it's for free for now. That goes in with it, and that's a beginner's Lightroom tutorial class. So, very proud of that. We spent a lot of time working on it, and they really did a tremendous job putting it together and filming it. It looks beautiful, independent of my face.
Wonderful.
But they really did a nice job filming it. It looks and sounds and fantastic.
Awesome.
And then the book, which is on Amazon, Dramatic Portrait. It's also available at rockynook.com, which is the publisher. You can get it from them as well. It's available as an ebook and in print. And I don't know what else.
And I have the ebook version right here on my trusty iPad. So yeah, thank you very much for that. Okay, I think that's it. Well, Chris, and then of course your website, as we've mentioned, is chrisknightphoto.com, right?
chrisknightphoto.com. Also Chris Knight Photography, but that's just going to redirect you.
Yeah, that's the same thing we did. So thisweekinphoto.com and thisweekinphotography will redirect you. So very good.
Perfect.
Very good. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it, man. It's been a pleasure.
Frederick.
Hey there, I'm Steve Brazel, and thanks for checking out the TWIB Network on YouTube. If you'd like to keep up to date with all the great shows that we're putting out, be sure to click subscribe, and while you're at it, give us a thumbs up. You can also subscribe on thisweekinphoto.com, where you'll find lots of other great photography shows. Thanks again for checking out the TWIB Network on YouTube.